Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Akshay Seth, who is Director of Engineering at FactSet. It's great to have you join us today. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Excited to chat with you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So let's get started now. So could you give us a bit of insight into your personal background and how you came into working in engineering and technology?
So I'm originally from Bombay, India. I did my schooling in Bombay. I grew up in a middle-class family back home. And, growing up, when I was growing up in India, there were very few career options which would, really make you money. So engineering was one of them. As I, finished high school and I started thinking about what I want to do in my career, I got access to a computer. I was, I think, around 14 or 15. And, I was just fascinated with, how computers worked. And it was very new for me. Internet was also very new at that time in India. So it is a perfect, mixture of, not knowing about computers and being fascinated with how the internet worked. And that really got me thinking. And so when I thought about undergrad and what I should do in undergrad, with the process of elimination, with very few career options, which, give you a nice livelihood in India, I decided to do computers. I did my undergrad in Bombay and from the Bombay University. And, I was really blown away with, what I had learned in the 4 years. So I thought, let's take it up a notch. And I started looking at options for, what I can do in this career. So I applied to a few schools in the States and I got admitted in Georgia Tech in Atlanta. So I came for master's to the States. That was an eye-opening experience, just the kind of things that were happening in the industry. Machine learning and AI were fairly new at that time. The big buzz at that time was distributed systems and Hadoop and, all the good stuff around distributed systems. So I did my specialization in distributed systems. And then once I graduated, I wanted to, work in a firm where I could, apply the concepts that I'd learned. I applied to a few firms, but I got an offer from FactSet. And among the other offers I had, I was really able to work in the field that I'd specialized in. So I moved to FactSet in 2012. So since then, I've been at FactSet in different engineering roles.
Excellent. So in terms of your role now, what does that entail?
So I took on a new role back in 2017, and before I go into that role, just a bit above myself, how I started at FactSet. So when I joined FactSet in 2012, I worked in the distributed systems team. FactSet's been a company which has been around since the late 1970s. So it's a fairly old company. It's evolved with times, the technology, and how it's marketed and produced products. And so when I joined the company, they already had a robust distributed systems platform. So I spent a few years there, just kind of honing in on the things I'd done in my master's. So after the first few years of doing individual contribution, I moved on to management. And in 2017, I took on a new role at FactSet, and that was to incubate an API program. And the idea with that program was simple. As FactSet had evolved its technology over the last 40 years or so, APIs were a new paradigm for FactSet. And the idea was, clients were moving away from, the packet solutions and managed solutions. And they wanted the ability to, take the content from, best of breed providers and then build their own solutions in-house. And so, FactSet was at the forefront and it recognized that. And so we decided to invest in that in 2017. So I took on that role and I started kind of building out the product and the team. And the last 3 years have been, an incredible journey, not only for me, but for the team who has been behind this. We released, several APIs that have benefited our clients in, the Americas, Europe, and Asia Pacific. And it's also helped us, increase the baseline revenue for FactSet.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great story. And what strikes me is, when you're building new products and implementing new ideas, and they're very much on the forefront of technology, where would you go to for inspiration around, how to do this? Where'd you go? I mean, I find the old school ways, like just reading in books and things like that, that seems pretty old school now. I don't really hear many people kind of using those resources. Where do you go?
Yeah, so I think it's a mix for me, Ben. What I've done in the past, you know, when I was starting off my career, was I would read more technology journals and conferences. So, you know, I would attend conferences from the big tech, like the Google conferences and the Amazon conferences. You know, they had the scale and the, you know, just the know-how to kind of help the developer in their journey of learning. But I think over the past few years, you know, that's changed a bit. You know, there have been a lot of ed tech platforms. If you take Khan Academy in the US, or if you take, several YouTube videos, you know, there are schools like the Harvard School, the Stanford School, you know, who have several seminars and sessions to kind of, you know, educate people about what's happening in the industry. So it's really a mix of, attending conferences and also kind of being familiar with, you know, where content is being generated, because it's no longer, like you said, in books and newsletters like it used to be. You know, there are a variety of sources. But the other thing I do a lot, and I've realized that as I've kind of moved in my career, is technology only takes you so far. And it's important to know, you know, what the business impact is of, you know, when you make a technology decision. And so, you know, thinking of technology from a different lens. So I read a lot of Financial Times and the BBC and the New York Times to get a sense of, you know, how does technology decisions help business and the other way around, right? Like how does business decision impact a firm which is heavily invested in technology? So, you know, looking at a problem from both aspects really helps you kind of solve it better.
Yeah, and it's interesting because new technologies, I find a lot of them are about speed, making things quicker. How do you ensure you're driving innovation with speed, with speed in mind?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question, Ben. And I've been thinking about that, you know, especially in the last 3 years as we launched the API program at FactSet, and you know, what I've been successful at doing, and as well as my team has been successful at doing, is that, you know, we've taken a fairly new paradigm for a fintech firm, which is APIs. And we've been able to accelerate internally. So there is a term which I, you know, came across recently called entrepreneur, which is really a mix of, you know, being an entrepreneur, but, you know, within an existing firm.
Yeah.
So I think, but I'll also say that I've been lucky with being at FactSet, because FactSet has been in the business for over 40 years, and it's gone through many ebbs and flows as the you know, both the markets have evolved and the technology has evolved. So it's been fairly ahead of its times in terms of adopting new technology and new standards relative to other fintech firms. Fintech firms, on an average, are, you know, I would say a 5 to 7 year lag between, you know, when the technology industry adopts something and when fintech adopts something. And I'll say FactSet has been, you know, relatively ahead, you know, compared to its peers in kind of adopting and embracing what's happening and, you know, shifting with times. And in the last decade or so, with technology changing so rapidly, you know, something that's built in, you know, 4 years back can quickly become legacy now. You know, the definition of legacy has shifted, you know, compared to what it was a few decades back, where you built something in the 80s by, you know, firms like IBM, and, you know, that stayed relevant for, you know, a good 20 years, and that's no longer the case. So the definition of legacy has also changed, and, you know, FactSet has been, you know, really great at kind of adopting and embracing that. And so, you know, going back to your point, I think, how do you build things with scale and, you know, with speed? I think for me personally, in the project that I, you know, recently have been successful at, you know, more than the technology, for me, the main challenge has been people. And at FactSet, you know, just kind of taking people along, like different functions which are not engineering, be it sales, be it consulting, be it strategy, who may not be that privy with technology, but they want to kind of learn it and take it forward. So working with them, educating them, building the right tools for them, and, you know, giving them the right ammunition so that they can go out and talk about it confidently. But that's been one of the big learnings for me, is, you know, how do you take other people along, along with the technologists at your firm, to really build a successful product? And then, you know, the other aspect is, you know, just failing fast, you know, not being afraid to, you know, release something which is iterative. And just being agile about it, not trying to build something which is perfect, and not waiting for months at end to release something to your client. So just being agile, failing fast, learning from your mistakes, and kind of building iteratively.
What interests me as well is when I've spoken to quite a lot of leaders in technology on this podcast, fortunately. And when I say about, new technologies and implementing new technologies into a big business, my initial thoughts were like, is that not really risky because there's so much at stake? But then their response is, it's risky not to make those new tech changes and big changes because you'll fall behind
Right.
and stagnate, and it's risky not to, which I thought was really surprising.
That's
But
right,
it's
yeah.
true. Do you always accept new technologies with open arms? What's your philosophy when there is new technologies?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag for me, Ben. I'm not a proponent of jumping in as soon as something new comes out. New and shiny objects are, always easy to get attracted to. But there is a balance, and like you said, especially with traditional firms, there is a lot at stake, and so it's important to strike a balance of, what can you do with, the emerging tech and the new tech that's coming, but at the same time, how do you not disrupt your own business, right? And disruption can be either good or bad, and so you want to do the good kind of disruption, where you're taking the company forward. So I would say it's a mix. Back from me, but what I do in my personal time is I jump in, especially for something that's new, because the stakes are much less when you're working on personal projects. So that's my way to kind of dabble into what's happening in the industry, what's coming out, and I'll give you an example. Machine learning and AI about a decade back was fairly new, right? There wasn't There weren't firms who were investing heavily in it. There weren't people who were taking that data science as a career. And back then, if you told a company executive that I want to implement machine learning in the firm, you would sound crazy. So,
It's true.
but
It's true.
times has changed, and big tech, Amazons and Googles of the world, they have invested heavily in that and built platforms for other industries and other firms to really take advantage of that. So the balance there is, just kind of acknowledging that there is something that's out there. And if I had to make a similar decision a decade back, and I would be cautious about machine learning and AI, but at the same time, keep an eye on it and see how that, that's maturing. I think the latest trends are, with cryptocurrency and, just distributed finance, right? How do you make sense of that? Just wait and watch policy, see how the industry is evolving there, and then slowly start embracing it and start introducing that in products and services that the firm has.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple of directions that I kind of want to take this in, so I've got to choose the fork in the road here. There's a question that I want to know, well, I'm interested in, and about problem solving in, with technology. And there's one particular area of that which I think people, when we relate this to new technologies, I think people can often focus on the new tech to solve the problem rather than the problem itself.
Yeah, I think I mean I that's an interesting thought that you posed, Ben. I mean, I think it depends also on the industry you are in. And if you look at the technology firms where technology is the bread and butter, I think it's okay there to experiment and really use something that's like a new thing or something that's not been battle tested. But for more traditional sectors, fintech is one of them. But if you're in oil and gas and manufacturing and a lot of other traditional sectors, it takes a while for people to embrace it, and systems to change. And so, the saying goes that if something's working, don't change it. Right. And so, but at the same time, you don't want to become a dinosaur, not adapt with time. And so I think as much as the end result is important, the process is also important. But depending on where you are situated and the industry you are in, the maturity of the firm, the maturity of the sector, and also the maturity of the person who is making the decision. I personally have seen, taking more riskier decisions when I was young, not knowing the overall impact of, what that decision could or could not do. And so I think that that's also a big component in, making sure that you're using the right tools to get to the end solution. And it's not always about, using the latest and greatest.
Yeah, definitely. And there was also another point when you're mentioning machine learning and AI. I mean, do you think we're on a tipping point now where we're going to see this implemented, everywhere?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you see a lot of startups that have come up in the last couple of years, companies like Datadog and, the Primers of the world and, the Palantirs of the world, like they've built their business on analyzing trends in the market, right? You take a news feed, either it's your social media or it's your traditional news sources and analyzing sentiments in that and, analyzing trends in that and creating solutions out of that. So I think it's reached that tipping point where, it's no longer the buzzword, right? It's become a necessity for firms to start using. And data is the new oil. The best way to handle data in today's day and age, because there is so much of it, is, really applying machines to it and taking it and then making sense of it. So I think we are definitely at that inflection point where, we move past, it being a new cool kid on the block and something that everyone has to start using and changing in their company culture, because otherwise they're going to quickly become obsolete.
Do you think that machine learning and AI is only so possible now because of data storage in the cloud and the very low cost of that and the very ease of use?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Ben. I think there are a couple of aspects there. One is definitely storage that you touched upon, where storage has become cheap, and you no longer get a massive bill if you're using the cloud, which was the case back in the day. But I think there is also a lot of platforms and tools that have been built by big tech, which has made it easy for companies to not having to invest in a massive data science team, right? Back in the day, if someone wanted to, use machine learning or AI, they had to hire, PhDs for their data science team. And, with platforms like TensorFlow and that Google has, for example, or, the machine learning services that Amazon has, it's made it easy for someone who's starting off right after college to make use of them in an effective way, right? The cost has gone down, the entry barrier has gone down, and so that's really helped people start using it and start trying out and understand what's happening. So I think both the entry barrier going down and just the access to getting in with the different tools and platforms has made it really easy for someone who has not spent their entire career in data science to start kind of leveraging it.
Yeah, it's a very exciting kind of time to be involved in technology. So what's been the biggest obstacle, either technical or personal, that you've faced and had to overcome on your journey to get to where you are today?
Yeah, Ben, I've heard some, some podcasts where, people talk about their journey, and I've also seen people within my firm and, within my friends who have, moved in their careers. And I will say that, everyone puts in their hard work when given a job or responsibility. And, I've done the same. But I do want to acknowledge a couple of things, which kind of go unnoticed in today's day and age. There is this big argument around merit versus privilege. And I was in a privileged position to be where I am, right? Being born in a middle-class family back home, my parents having the ability to send me to the best education institutions back home, and then having access to information, being in a big city like Bombay, and just knowing, what's out there and pursuing my master's. So, I can't but not acknowledge the privilege that I was born into. To kind of know that, what I can do with my career. So You know, definitely that's the first aspect of things that go unnoticed, right? Beyond just the hard work. And the second thing, which is, again, I personally believe that, you know, everyone needs a bit of that is, you know, being at the right place at the right time. And you know, not taking anything away from, you know, the hard work and the perseverance that I have shown in the last 9 years while I'm at FactSet. But, you know, that's an important thing to have in your career, irrespective of whichever sector you are in. You just have to be at the right place at the right time. And you know, many times it's a doing of what you've done, you know, while you have been in a certain role. But, you know, many times it's just being, you know, privy to information that no one else would have been. And that really helps you kind of move to the next stage in your career. So, you know, that's another aspect of my career where, you know, right before I took on the role in 2017, you know, there was a lot of shift happening at FactSet and, you know, I was at the center of it. And that certainly helped me, you know, rethink where I want to be in my career. And that was a big driver in making me make that decision of taking on the role. So I'll say, you know, beyond the two aspects, I mean, I've certainly put in a lot of hard work and, but you know, it's, you know, it's just more than that. You know, there are many aspects to anyone's journey which go unnoticed, and you know, these two are certainly the ones that I would like to acknowledge, because you know, that takes you places knowingly or unknowingly. And I'm sure you've heard, you know, you've been on you know, this podcast for, and you've spoken to many leaders. And is that a trend that you've seen, that you know, people have been, you know, being in the right place at the right time? But second is, what do they do with that opportunity? Like, have you seen more of that when you've spoken to other leaders?
Well, to be honest with you, that's not been a very common answer, to be honest. I think people mainly focus on almost like list the progression that they've made and how that kind of came about. It's quite rare that people say it was right place, right time. It's strange.
I also think, you know, in the day and age we live in, it's easy to boast about what you are and where you are, and it's purely because of your hard work. But there are so many, you know, non-tangibles that happen in everyone's life that, you know, without those events happening, it would be very hard for anyone to be in the place they would end up in.
Yeah, it's really strange, actually, because I do this sometimes where if you think of how this big change happened, right, and then you take back, well, if you work backwards from it in order of what happened up to that point, it's unbelievable.
And it's, you know, while you are in the moment and, you know, in that phase, it's very hard to identify that. But, you know, when you take a step back, you know, more retrospective, it's easy to connect the dots and you know, really make sense of, you know, and it's not always that you end up in the right place at the right time, but it's just a series of events that lead you to that. Yeah. Just knowing someone from, you know, from your school or, you know, from grad school or, you know, be it from your community or be it from the grocery store you went to for years, and just knowing someone there, yeah, having that in-person contact is, you know, goes a long way.
Yeah, and we were mentioning before making your own luck, and I think that is a point that's really important. It's like, you know, you can have all these opportunities come up to you, but then it's about monopolizing on them. And it's really is down to those last points of actually taking the chances.
I couldn't agree more. You know, there is a, when presented with a challenge, you know, it's not on you to think about why you are in that, but to really know how you could react to it. Right, so that's really the controllables in your hand, and you know, again, it's getting a bit philosophical, but it's true. I mean, you know, you can't always decide, you know, where you are put in a situation, but it is in your control to see how you react to it and come out of it. And so, to your point, yeah, I mean, one, you know, given the non-tangibles and tangibles, you might end up in a situation or, you know, be presented with a challenge, but how do you take that head on is based on the decisions and how you kind of think through that.
Definitely. It's really, really interesting. And yeah, it's, I mean, to get to where you are, you've had a really interesting story and really interesting life up to this point. So it's nice that you mentioned, you know, the luck involved. Which is often overlooked by a lot of people, I find. Just to finish up, actually, I think we've got one more question. And is there anything that seems underestimated in the industry to you?
Yeah, I think, I don't want to sound philosophical, but I would say patience is really underestimated. And, we spoke about that a bit in the podcast, but I think patience applies to many aspects in everyone's career. And, I'll start off with just the people aspect where, with social media and the age we are living in with instant gratification, people tend to not be patient in their careers. They want to, move on to the next big thing and take on the next big challenge. But so often, it's about investing in what you're doing in your current role or in your current responsibility. Think about a situation where, you are heading a multinational and you have, 10 people out of grad school with great ideas and great resumes. Would you ask them to lead a large organization? And the answer is no, because you want people who are experienced, who have seen the trends and the shifts in how both the industry and the company has gone through. So, being patient in what you're doing and sticking course sometimes is, fairly underestimated, especially in the age we live in. And then, applying yeah, that also applies to technology and then the decisions we make on a day-to-day basis. To your earlier points about emerging tech and new tech, it's easy to kind of look outside and say, there are so many firms who are innovating at a fairly different pace compared to what you're doing. But the challenge is to know, why that is. And, not all firms' core business is tech. And so, appreciating that and at the same time not being too patient and otherwise you'll become obsolete in the industry, but striking that right balance and being patient with the processes and kind of acknowledging that decisions have been made in the past and you want to challenge them, but at the same time accept that not everything can be changed overnight. And so being patient with the tools and now the technologies and working through that and working with your peers and getting it to a place which not only helps the business but also helps the people around you grow, because they're far too often there are careers that have been built knowing a certain tech, and there is going to be resistance when you introduce something new. So that but the real leader in my mind is taking those people along and not shunning them away, because they evolved in a time when technology was not changing that rapidly, right? So I would say patience also applies there. And then finally, more on a day-to-day basis, when I used to be an engineer, hands-on coding, and even now when I manage a team, when you write code and when you deploy code, you have to be patient to see the results. This is not something that you'll see results immediately, right? Like you have to grind the system and make sure it's there for a fairly long amount of time. Clients don't trust a product overnight. It takes years to build trust, and the same applies when you do your system upgrades and when you do your production installs. There is a lot of rigor that has to go in. There also has to be thought of how do you support this a product. And it's not always about moving on to the next thing. So I would say patience overall, in both the people aspect, the tech aspect, and just the day-to-day operation aspect, is fairly underrated and underestimated. And because just because of the age we live in, people want to see instant results and just move on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's great advice. So, thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me today. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation, and I mean, I love it when I have these conversations and we just kind of just let it go and just see what comes out. I think it's really, really fun, and I always learn so much. So, yeah, thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ben. Great chat today.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.